Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, this is Jill Ajeezy, and we've got John McCune's music in the background playing. Love it, it's so great. Thank you to John McCune from the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. He's such a great guy, part owner of the station with my good friend Ruthie DiTucci, and I'm just so pleased with both of them. I got a call from the Copley Press yesterday that John McCune and Ruthie DiTucci and a couple of other people had nominated me for First Citizen, and I'm humbled. I'm shocked, and I thank you all so much for thinking of me, first of all, and for validating the work that I do on a volunteer basis. Thank you all so much. Way to go, John and Ruthie and Catherine and Maureen. Thank you very, very much. The other thing I want to tell you all about here on Family Matters today is we've got a couple of things coming up in October and November. There's a couple of great parental alienation and family law conferences happening, the first of which is in Nebraska on Friday, October 19th. It is going to take place at the Omaha building in Omaha, Nebraska. It is for CLE credits in Iowa and Nebraska. Registration fee is $75, and some of my friends will be presenting there, Dr. Amy Baker, Dr. Linda Nielsen, Dr. Edward Kruk, Attorney Jim Pritikin, who, of course, you all know represented Dwayne Wade and got his children back from a very bad alienation situation with the help of Dr. Michael Bone from Florida. So this is a conference, if you're anywhere in the Midwest, that you don't want to miss. It's going to be incredible. If you want information on that conference, www.midwestfamilylaw.org can help you out with that. The other conference is a Parental Alienation Awareness Organization, USA, and we are partnering with my Florida chapter manager, Danica Joan Fields, who also has another not-for-profit called Kids Need Both. We're putting on a conference on November 16th, which will include Dr. Mike Bone, Dr. Bob Evans, and Attorney Brian Ludmer, who you all know from Canada, who is very successful at returning children to the target parent. And then the next day, on the 17th, Danica has lined up a great advocacy training and bringing in a facilitator to make that all happen. And there'll be an evening event on the 16th, a mixer so that everybody can meet. This big, small world of parental alienation will all come together in Lakeland, Florida. If you want information on that, go to kidsneedbolt.org, and the registration information is there. Hope to see you all there in Lakeland, Florida, and I hope if you're anywhere near Omaha, Nebraska on October 19th, you can make it out to Trends and Emerging Issues at the Intersection of Mental Health and Family Law. That is a big, big, big topic to cover, but you've got the best there to do it. So Judge Michelle is working today. This is not our normal time to be on, but we're going to tape this today and run it on Wednesday. We've got a great guest for you today. I'm in a play called Sordid Lives, so dress rehearsal is this week and next week. If you're anywhere near Springfield, Illinois, on September 20th, 29th, and 30th, or October 5th, 6th, 7th, come on by the Legacy Theater and see one of the funniest plays I have ever been in. Just hilarious. And it's a Del Shores written play and a story about a woman who hits her head on a sink and dies and her family coming back for the funeral. Now, that topic doesn't sound very funny, but it is. So please come if you can for information on that. For my Central Illinois and Chicagoland listeners is thelegacytheater.com. Okay, enough of me. Jerry Mastrangelo is here with us today. And normally, you guys know, we don't do stories with parents. But when I see something that I think is important and unusual, I like to highlight that. And I think you're going to hear some things today that are a little bit different and some interesting interesting things about some testimony that occurred a couple of weeks ago in the case of Jerry and him trying to see his triplets. So welcome, Jerry. How are you?
I'm fine, Jill. Thank you very much, and I'm glad to be on Family Matters, and I also want to, first of all, congratulate you on your First Citizens Award.
Well, thank you. Let's just hope that, I just hope, I don't even care if I win. I mean, being nominated is good enough. You know, we have such a great, great group of people that have been assembled that it would be hard-pressed for me to win. But if I do, that's fine. If not, I'm good just being nominated. So thank you for that. I appreciate
You're welcome.
It. You said you were having some pretty bad weather out there today. And I have to say, this is the first time I've been able to say in a long time, it's sunny here and it's not 112. So, and tonight we're going to get down to 35, which is terrific. I'm so excited. So you've got rain, though, and it's not so good out there, huh?
No, but it's supposed to clear up in the next few days. So,
well,
spring will be here soon.
It will, won't it? It seems like as you get older, doesn't it go faster?
It sure does.
Everything goes faster. All right, well, Jerry, let's get into the meat of this and talk about why we're here today.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about you and your business, the business side of your life. Tell me what you do.
Well, I'm an owner. I became an owner when I was a junior in college. I opened up a gym along with my partner, Mike Katz, who's a well-known bodybuilder. And we opened up what was called a world gym at the time. And so that was, I graduated from college. I got my master's degree in health science, and I've been working for myself ever since, and we've grown our business, and today, as of 2004, we became a Planet Fitness, which is a franchise. There's close to 600 locations throughout the country, and we own 5 locations in the greater New Haven market. So, you know, we have some pretty big businesses, and I'm proud of our business, and that's where we're at with that part of it.
And so are you in the office on a daily basis? You go in, you're working that. You're not at the point where you're kind of relaxing and taking it easy yet.
No, I'm very much hands on, and you know, when I after I got divorced, I kind of rearranged my schedule so I can make my children a priority based upon my parenting plan. So, although at this point, you know, I don't have to worry about that because, as you know, I'm involved in involved in the alienation, and so I'm just working more hours and putting some time in my quest to try to get reunified with the children.
Good, good. Okay, well, let's talk about your children. And you were married in what year? 97, right?
Yes, got married in 97, and I was very happily married, by the way.
And how long were you married?
We were married until, the actual divorce was 2007, but I was told about the divorce in 2005.
Okay. So it wasn't some of these marriages with parental alienation last a long time. I mean, by today's standards, you know, 20, 25 years. And so you were married a relatively short time.
Yes.
Yes.
And our children were born in 1999.
In 99. And so let's just fast forward, because you were relatively happy through the birth of your children, I think, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I had built a big, beautiful home. So a month after the kids were born, they had the opportunity to move into our dream home. And that's where I thought I was going to be involved in seeing the kids grow up. And unfortunately, a few years later, all of that changed.
The kids are triplets.
Yeah.
And they are, you call them your miracle triplets. Why do you call them that?
Well, our children were born prematurely on the 26th week. And, you know, probably 10 or 15 years prior to that, our children probably wouldn't have survived. So they had to overcome some fantastic odds. I mean, the children were less than 2 pounds, all three of them. So they were in the intensive care for probably close to 3 months. And that was it. God was with us, and we did a lot of praying and a lot of support from family. And first, the children had to, you know, the first stage is, are they going to survive? And once you get beyond that, it's a matter of what birth defects are they going to have. So it was a long road, and believe it or not, the children got through it all, as difficult as it was. And the only slight birth defect that one of my boys, Anthony, he has a impaired vision in one eye.
And boy, in my other life, I have been a volunteer and a board member and on the executive board of United Cerebral Palsy for 17 years. And so many, I host our annual telethon, raise a lot of money for them. And so many of the kids that I interview on the show that I do for them and the telethon are twins and triplets, and they've had, been born prematurely, but have had some pretty severe damage from birth traumas and from being premature. So I would say you are an extremely lucky man, and in that you came out with a very minimal disability, and that's terrific.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, okay, so the kids came home, everything's
right.
Going along quite nicely, and you've moved into this gorgeous home. In 2004, your then wife asked for a divorce.
Yeah, well, we were on vacation in Florida, and it kind of shocked me, because while we were on the vacation, she mentioned to me that when we get back, there's something that she wants to talk to me about. And of course, you know, when somebody says that, I mean, it raises your level of curiosity, and who could wait till you get home? So I finally got it out of her in terms of, you know, what's on your mind, what is it? And she said that I'm thinking about getting a divorce, we need to be separated. And I was just completely shocked. I mean, we were 2 days into a vacation, and you know, all I could say is obviously the vacation was ruined, and I was just devastated by that. And as soon as I got home, I contacted my priest, and I, you know, felt that was a good place to start. Let's go talk to him and see if we could, you know, try to find out what the problem is and try to fix it.
Was she Catholic as well?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, go ahead. Talk to the priest.
So that was it, and we decided to get some marriage counseling. Mm-hmm. And we ended up, you know, doing that for a year. And by the time the year ended, things I thought were back on track. As a matter of fact, we were at the point where instead of going to see the marriage counselor every week, we were starting to see her twice a month, and we were getting to the point of even seeing her less than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything seemed to be back on track, and then that brought us into 2005, and then suddenly, out of nowhere again, I was told that she wanted the divorce, and actually she blamed it on our dog. That the dog, our dog actually bit another dog, and, you know, she wanted me to get rid of the dog, and I said, oh, my God, this is, now over a dog. So, but little did I found out later it wasn't about the dog at all,
no.
Obviously. And it
was, the dog was a pawn just like the children.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so when I finally decided in 2005, it was in July, I figured I'll leave the marital home, and I figured, okay, I'm sure I'll be back in maybe a few weeks, and maybe she again just needs to clear her head or whatever. And so I left with the understanding, at least in my mind, that I was returning, but I never returned. So from there, things just kind of, I moved out, and eventually, let's see, things weren't getting any better in terms of the communication between her and I. I thought maybe being apart, you know, we would, you know, able to determine that we missed each other and, you know, that would get us back. But that never happened. And it was probably a number of months later that, you know, I had some suspicions at that point, you know, well beyond the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did hire a private eye, and it probably took less than 24 hours where I had a name and an address as to where she was and who the person was. And, you know, all of a sudden I realized that there was a third party in the picture after all.
Right. And how were you feeling at that point? I mean, did you think I've got to go back and try to make it work, or were you done?
No, I mean, I actually, you know, held that information. I wasn't going to tell anybody because, again, I still had faith that, you know, we could work through this. And the last thing I wanted to do was to all of a sudden let people around me know, oh, God, you're never going to believe what's going on here. You know, when Trudy, when my ex-wife is saying that she's staying at her friend's house, you know, it's certainly not her friend, it's her lover. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I started to get more and more information about, you know, her nights out while I'm, you know, hearing about this. But I still decided to not say anything with the hopes of, you know, being able to talk to her and see if we could put this behind us for the sake of the kids. I mean, we had three young children. They were 6 years old at the time. And the last thing I wanted to do was to, you know, be divorced and have these children not have their father in their lives, you know, in terms of being able to, you know, to live in the marital home and all of that. So, and then, you know, time just went on and on and on. And then we got to the point where later that, towards the end of the year, it was in December, there was a deposition. And in that deposition, it did come out that she was involved in you know, with another relationship.
Mm-hmm. And where were the children at this point? With her?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have, you know, because I didn't, again, I didn't have a place. I was staying at a friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was sleeping on an air mattress at a friend's living room floor while she was certainly, you know, enjoying the, you know, the 5,400 square foot house and having parties and, you know, all of that stuff. So I didn't have, you know, overnights with the kids. I didn't have much of a schedule. So I was really at that point seeing the kids probably an hour and a half, 2 hours, twice a week, during which time I was expected to get their homework done and get them fed. So, you know, I really didn't have a lot of time that I was spending, you know, with the kids.
And certainly no quality time with the kids.
No. And, you know, for a while I was able to spend the my every other weekend at the marital home. And you know, that was a little strange one day when I went into the marital home, and of course, you know, all the pictures of me were gone. And on one particular weekend, I guess in her haste to kind of do a sweep of the house, she forgot a few pictures. So there were pictures on the nightstand of my ex-wife and her lover. And you know, it was kind of a weird feeling just being in my, I still considered it my home at that time for some reason, but, you know, but my pictures weren't in there and his were.
And how, she had apparently then introduced the children to this person.
Yeah, in it was Christmas actually in that 2005, the month after the deposition. You know, a few things happened. First thing that happened, you know, things were starting to heat up. I had deposed this person's ex-wife, and that certainly, you know, didn't go over very well. At least, you know, she was very unhappy, meaning my ex. And 2 days after I did that, I had a restraining order on me. So that kind of started the, you know, the process. And but that Christmas in 2005, I didn't get to see the kids, but yet they were introduced, and you know, to their boyfriend, and you know, a gentleman who's you know, a doctor at Yale New Haven Hospital. So he had the pleasure of meeting the kids and being with them the Christmas morning opening presents, and I guess you could say the alienation had already begun, because I was nowhere to be found on Christmas, not by choice, of course.
Did he have children?
No, he had no children, and he, you know, I had, you know, found out that, you know, he had filed for divorce approximately 30 days before she did. So he ended up getting divorced on the 91st day. He certainly did not, you know, want that situation to, you know, to prolong itself. So he ended that, and then this situation was already in full gear. So he moved from that to my situation.
So then how did your time become less and less with the – are they all boys, all three of them?
No. I have two boys and a girl. And actually, my time didn't become less and less. It became more and more because, again, I didn't have much time because, again, I didn't have a situation that had my own place.
Right.
So eventually there was a number of family relations reports. And with each report, I mean, they realized that, you know, how difficult it was to, you know, have the kids for 2 hours and be driving around, being in the car, you know, doing homework and all of that. So I got some additional time, and the person who was doing the family relations report, he realized that I actually needed even more time because he became aware, you know, from me that there was a third party in the picture. And again, the third party was actually had much greater access to my children than I did. And, you know, he made it very clear in his family relations reports that this relationship is too early. You know, you're too early to, you know, these children are too young, and, you know, this really shouldn't be going on because, you know, going into 2006, I mean, they were already vacationing together. Probably in, it was sometime at the end of 2006 or mid-2006, I forget now all these dates, but he had set bunk beds up. So there was a period of time where, you know, the kids weren't even spending weekends with me, but yet he set bunk beds up at his condo. So the children were actually sleeping over at his house more than they were seeing me. So
And so were they calling him Dad?
Not that I was aware of at the time. And but, you know, clearly it was the type of situation that, in looking back, I was being pushed out. And certainly my ex-wife was doing everything she could to endorse that relationship at my expense. And so it just, you know, made things difficult. And it wasn't until July of 2006 that I have my own place. And probably prior to that, it must have been 4 or 5 months prior to that, I got my schedule, you know, in terms of, more time. And by that July of 2006, I mean, you know, the kids were staying over more often, and, you know, the transition was starting to take place.
Okay, so then what happened? Let's just keep going. I mean, ultimately, she shut you out completely?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't – I mean, well, I got shut off completely in 2010, October of 2010. But, you know, between – we eventually got divorced, you know, 2 years later. And what happened, we finally – I was trying to get the kids into counseling early on, both – in 2005 and 2006, and she refused. And one of the reasons why she refused, although she blamed it on the kids, she didn't want to put the kids through it, it was really as a result of her not wanting to expose some of, you know, her actions, you know, with a third party. And so I guess she decided, you know what, the last thing I want to do is get told professionally by a therapist that, you know, this relationship is getting in the way of the relationship with their father and their kids. So eventually a GAL got involved, and that GAL is involved today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk a little bit about her in a little while. But so eventually she decided that she would take the kids to counseling. This was sometime in 2007 now. So we go to counseling, and one of the major things that this therapist wanted to do was to get a parenting plan. So, again, this is almost 2 years later, and so this is considered a pretty high-conflict divorce. At one point, which I forgot to mention, they were going on vacations, you know, pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I filed a motion because they were going to Bermuda. And I said, you know what, they've been to Boston, they've been to a few other vacations short term. I said, you know, this just isn't healthy for the kids. So I had filed a motion to prevent this upcoming vacation. And the GAL, her words of wisdom to the judge was, you know, the kids have been on a few vacations already with the boyfriend. They seem to like him, so I don't have a problem with that. So, of course, it got granted, and they went to Bermuda with the boyfriend. So, again, you know, that family unit had already begun to, you know, take shape.
Right.
You know, and again, as I got farther and farther pushed out, he was being, brought in closer and closer. So eventually, getting back to 2007, we finally worked out a parenting plan because we had a date in early 2008 for a trial. And my position was either I'm going to get, you know, a fair parenting plan where I'm going to be able to play a big role in my children's lives, or I'm going to trial. And she didn't want to go to trial, I'm sure, only because of the exposure to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wouldn't have looked too good with all the stuff that would have come out. So finally, towards the end of that 2007, we worked out a fair and equitable parenting plan that I thought, was great in terms of, as I mentioned, my involvement with the kids. And in December of 2007, we finally got divorced. And, I had the kids, of course, every other weekend. I had them Friday through Monday morning. I had an opportunity to have them during the week. So I had them overnights during the week. I had even extended time during the summers. And I really had a really good schedule that I was happy about. And at that point, I just wanted to concentrate on my business and the children, and you know, life can go on, and let's make the best of it. But, eventually that all changed.
And so at that time, did you notice anything odd in your time with them, or was it just a father-child relationship? There was no sign then of any alienation going on?
No, I mean, again, you know, the kids had to adjust, you know, to the two homes, which, I'm not going to say was easy. But again, I think some of the difficulty was the fact that, you know, I wasn't being endorsed by the custodial, you know, parent. And, when we got divorced in 2007, the following month, which was January 2008, the boyfriend then moves into the marital home. So, you know, I'm going to, you know, just tell you what the schedule of events were. I mean, because things happened pretty quickly. So he moves into the house, and by February, which, you know, the following month, he's engaged. By April, she's pregnant and married. So, you know, suddenly within 4 months of this divorce, you had these major changes where the boyfriend's now, a big part of the family. He's living in the house, and, you know, you're engaged. Apparently you're pregnant before, you're divorced, and next thing you know, you're married, and then you know, finally, you know, you're married in April, and you know, that's it. So that was a lot of change and a lot of stress on these kids. And I believe at that point the kids started to become more and more confused with, you know, the two families. And again, soon
and
after that.
Six at this point?
This was 2008, so they would have been now nine.
Nine, okay.
And sometime during that year, a few months after all this, you know, maybe it was towards the end of that, you know, 2008, my daughter started wetting her pants pretty regularly, and even at times soiling her pants. And again, all of this got blamed on the fact that, you know, she, according to the mother, that she just was under so much stress of being with me that this happened. And so in the meantime, the kids started seeing another therapist in 2009, and that turned out to be a complete, I mean, that 3 years later, they're still seeing this therapist. There's still no treatment plan, and that's a whole other story of a therapist who doesn't recognize alienation, and you know, he actually made the situation a lot worse. So I know we're kind of jumping around now, but in any event, the kids were under a lot of stress, especially my daughter. I often, you know, my ex-wife would commonly try to schedule all kinds of things on my, you know, she on my time. She clearly didn't respect my time with the kids. It wasn't important in any way. And so again, you know, I started to feel, although things at that point started to get a lot more comfortable. I mean, the kids now were on the same schedule since, mm-hmm. you know, it was now maybe 3 years. So, you know, but suddenly things started, you know, like the transitions were supposed to be at school. Suddenly they became at the house, you know, because the kids would have tutoring or they have different things. And things just began to change, and you know, eventually it wasn't for the better either.
So there, we know children aren't resilient after divorce, and with all of the things that she threw at them in that 4 month time span, a new baby, a live-in, a different live-in, or a boyfriend that lives in, and maybe being called daddy, we don't know. That's a lot for a child. And so you saw psychological disruption in, especially in your daughter.
Yes.
And then what do you think would have been the logical next step if you were trying to prevent any further damage to your children? If you knew then what you know now, would you have done something different at that moment?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I often would get blamed for things like I didn't want the children to be involved in social activities on my time. And it really wasn't true. I guess, you know, if I was guilty of anything, yes, at times maybe I didn't pay as much attention to my daughter, you know, and that's more of the gender type thing. You know, I connected with my two sons with sports, and obviously there was a bond there. But, you know, hey, you know, becoming a dad and this whole process, it is a learning process.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't perfect. I made plenty of mistakes. But through all that, I felt things were getting better and better with the relationship. You know, we were going on vacations. I forgot, you know, to mention one of the most important things. I had a significant other, you know, Jennifer, who's just a real great person and just unbelievable support. And just to backtrack a little bit about her, you know, I was dating her, and again, the difference was that I didn't want to introduce the children to her, it was probably a year and a half after we were together that I introduced the kids to her. And so, because I felt that the kids didn't need any further confusion. They were already confused with having a boyfriend, you know, involved. And the last thing I wanted to do was to throw somebody else in there. But in the meantime, you know, we were going on vacations and we had our little family unit going. And I thought things were progressing and getting better and better, you know, through 2009 and 2010. And then it was in April of 2010 when I would say that between that January and April, I thought things were, as I said, really, we were making a lot of progress. I felt the kids were comfortable. I thought everything was going great. And then in April 2010, I got a motion served in which she wanted reduced time, reduced visitation.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't understand that because I said, but little did I know, you know, the alienation was already going on. In other words, you had this cycle going on where I'm thinking one thing and the kids are reporting other things to their alienating mother. So, of course, she decided she had to protect these kids. And, you know, the way you protect these kids is, you know, they deserve to spend less time with the other parent. So we filed a motion. And she filed a motion, and I just wanted some communication, some therapy between her and I. But she filed a motion for reduced time, more money. You know, she was getting for child support $800 a week, but that wasn't enough. And according to her, of course, and she also wanted a psychological evaluation. And at this point, she had a year and a half of this therapist that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So there was already a conspiracy, as far as I'm concerned, that was going on. She had this therapist who I wasn't in favor of because he was 50 minutes away. And so, you know, she would take the kids there every week. So she had a year and a half of therapy sessions. And basically, the kids would come in each and every session to give their, what I call their daddy complaints. So no matter how well things were going between the kids and Jennifer and I, the kids would come in each and every week, and I eventually have gotten his notes. So when I say that, I'm not just, you know, guessing it. I mean, I could see, you know, every week kids are coming in and just bashing their daddy. You know, if there was 20 things that were good and the one thing that was bad, well, you know, they ended up talking for that session about the one thing that was bad. So at that point, you know, she had everything lined up. She had a GAL that believed in this therapist who as far as I was concerned, the guy was incompetent. And you had a year and a half of notes. So the only thing that was missing from this her strategy was a psychological exam. You know, maybe this exam would prove somehow that I was angry and mean and this and that and all those things. So and I didn't want that, and I pleaded with her. I said, listen, things are going well as far as from my standpoint. Why don't we just try to get the necessary therapy from you and I, and we don't need to bring the kids further into this conflict. In the end, in front of the judge, I mean, you know, they told a bunch of lies about how these kids are crying when I pick them up, and it was just lie after lie after lie. The judge bought it, and so what she decided was, you know, I want all parties to have the psychological examination. The GAL, by the way, her recommendation was we are beyond counseling. So, you know, what a GAL that is, right,
mm-hmm.
to say that you know, there's so much conflict here and so much discord that, you know, these two, you know, can't be helped. So the judge certainly didn't buy into that. So she ordered all parties for the psychological examination as well as the for us to get the coaching from a therapist. So that was it. And so then we fast forward a few months later. The psychological exam is over. And that comes back, and the conclusion was ultimately, no change in visitation, that the children need both parents, the children are bonded to both parents, and it was pretty favorable. He did mention some alienation, slightly, although, again, the kids were still seeing me, so I think he used the word maybe not in its truest sense. But he did, make some pretty important observations in terms of he felt that the kids were being rehearsed, because after he saw the kids and I, the kids came back the next session and they said, "Oh, we really didn't feel good about Daddy," and he thought that was something was wrong there. He said, from a spontaneity standpoint, he saw the kids bonded with me, and then when they come back, they're kind of making excuses. So, in any event, there was no change in the visitation. And it took about 10 days after that where I go to pick up the kids, and my daughter was up in a tree. And it seemed kind of odd. It's she wouldn't come down. And so my ex-wife comes to the car and says, I can't get her down from the tree. And she says she's never coming over again. She's had it and all this. And what had happened, there was so much anticipation that the kids, wouldn't have to see their father again that much. Because little did I know, behind my back, they already had another visitation schedule written up, which gave me about 2 days a month of visitation. It was ridiculous. And the reason how I know that is when we subpoenaed this therapist's notes, this therapist behind my back, although he claimed throughout the whole process that, he was always in favor of the kids spending time with me, he and my ex-wife had worked out another parenting plan. And the GAL was probably in on that as well. So anyhow, these kids anticipated that after this psychological examination, they were, they wouldn't have to have all the visitation that they were used to. And so that was it. My daughter said she's never coming down from the tree and all of that. So what eventually happened, I took the boys, and a few days after, we went to this therapist, and he said to me, Jerry, do you think here's what I recommend. I recommend you suspend visitation. And for everybody listening out there, let me make it loud and clear.
Don't do it.
Ever do it. It's the biggest mistake I have ever made. I put my faith into this guy thinking that he, and I don't know why, because I did have no confidence in him, but he just had me in a position where he felt like, he led me to believe that we'll work through this, and in a few weeks, things
will resume.
Everything
will be fine, right.
Yeah. And so I said, okay, well, I figured I got my two boys. If we have to work through this, it kind of makes sense. So let's do that. And as I said, my daughter hasn't been over since. And it took about another less than a week, and my two boys decided to join in with their sister. So it was, a week after that, I'm coming to pick them up, and nobody's getting in the car.
Everybody's in the tree.
Yeah, so, October 2010 is really the time when the children decided, that's it, I'm not going over Daddy's anymore. And that was it.
So right now, you are sitting in family court in Connecticut, and what is the goal at this point? Have you filed for change of custody?
Yeah, well, what happened was this, Jill. It was, let me just think now. So, we got through October, November, December of 2010. And again, when this thing first started, not seeing the kids for a week or 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I mean, it seemed like forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd miss my kids when they went on a vacation with their mother. And here it is, a month, 2 months, my first Christmas without the kids again. In January of 2011, I filed a motion for reunification therapy, and that was granted. So I figured, okay, it's been maybe 3 months, but we'll get things back on track. Well, fast forward to July of 2011, and as far as this court order reunification therapy, it just wasn't happening because she wasn't able or didn't want to take the kids to the therapy. You know, her excuse was they don't want to go. So the kids have been so empowered from their mother that if you don't want to see your father, you don't have to. You don't want to go to reunification therapy, you don't have to, and I can't force you. And suddenly, and they're still seeing this therapist who's listening to them and you know, making them feel like their feelings are validated. And so finally, by July of 2011, we probably had three sessions with the reunification therapist, with, you know, me and the kids. And that clearly wasn't working, which it wasn't the therapist. And by the way, she hated the reunification therapy because he was the first one that recognized. As a matter of fact, one of the first few sessions, he said to her, "How have you flown under the radar for so long?" Because he read the psychological exam, he read the family relations report, and he just couldn't understand how you know, things got to that point. But again, you know, she had the GAL believing in her. So he was the first one that recognized that something's wrong here. And so, of course, she didn't like him. And if she doesn't like him, the kids don't like him. So, you know, you just had this whole dynamics of this whole thing. It was a total breakdown. So I filed motions in July of 2011, and the motions had to do with contempt of the parenting plan, contempt of reunification therapy. So I wanted sole custody and financial sanctions was a third. I wanted the removal of the incompetent therapist was another one. I had another motion that was granted that gave me the opportunity to present a video of the kids in court. And one other was to modify the parenting plan. So I filed six motions. I decided that I was going to do it pro se. You know, I just said, listen, I you know, don't want to go through all the expense and all of that. And so I finally got a court date of October 2011. And we go to court, and I had an expert witness for alienation. I had...
Who was your expert witness?
Well, I had somebody locally in Connecticut. His name was Dr. David Israel.
Okay.
And so, and I also had the reunification therapist who was somebody who ran the a task force in Connecticut for parental alienation. So he was very familiar with parental alienation, and he recognized it early on. So I had those two as my witnesses, expert witnesses. And so I was ready to go to court, and we go that day, and it seemed like they weren't quite ready because her attorney decided that she didn't want to go. And well, she had asked, I know, there was something with, I filed a motion late on one of the expert witnesses. So that got denied, and so we have our court date, and she decides to change direction, and she asked for an AMC. Mm-hmm. So that meant we didn't have our you know, first day of trial, and they appointed the kids an AMC. So now you just had another layer. Besides the GAL, you had the AMC. And by the way, the GAL was worthless. She did nothing to protect these kids. You know, at one time, my ex-wife decided she didn't want to, when we had that court order for this Dr. Jeffrey Zimmerman, who was supposed to help us with our communication and all that. She decided she didn't want to go anymore. And so I didn't want to go back to court. And her excuse was, you know, she had to pay an extra $25. And she said she couldn't afford it. Well, that $25, I mean, she's probably spent $75,000 since then.
Mm-hmm.
So, so anyhow, that was it. And so I soon found out in trying to represent myself that this wasn't going to work out. I could see how the system works. In Connecticut, that whole thing is a good old boy network, I call it, and I wasn't a part of it. So I decided I needed an attorney. So I got a high-profile criminal attorney who was somebody that I had a relationship with, I knew well. And, he's written some books, and he's handled some pretty big cases, none of which were family law. But anyhow, I got him involved, and I felt like he could be somebody who can certainly make a difference, because he's certainly not part of that network that's going up on that third floor every day.
Mm-hmm.
So he got involved a few months after that. And so to date, if you look at that October 11th, the first day I was supposed to have been in court, it's been 14 months, and I've been in front of a judge one day. This past week, we were supposed to have 4 days of court time. 4 days ended up being one day. And but what happened in the meantime, our case got stronger, where, we decided to get, somebody who's I consider one of the leading experts in the country, Dr. Amy Baker.
In the world.
In the world, forget the country. And Linda Gopley, they're my two expert witnesses, and they're just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of had a new team with a high profile divorce attorney. A criminal attorney who I felt like was going to do a great job in family law court, and with Dr. Baker and Linda. And and then what eventually happened, we started to get a lot of interest from, from the media. And, I want to change some laws in Connecticut. I really do. And I have a state senator who's willing to pass some bills. He needs to get reelected in November, which I know he will. And he's already expressed his support. And, I'm excited about the opportunity of trying to make a difference. I mean, my first goal is to get my children back, who I haven't seen in, for the most part, in 2 years. And, we had our first day in court, and as the alienation world knows, we had a pretty good first day.
You did. You had a pretty good first day, and what Jerry's alluding to is Dr. Amy Baker's testimony was allowed, and she was qualified to be an expert and allowed to speak on the 17 specific strategies of parental alienation and how it affects children and what the devastating, long-lasting effects of that are. So that was a big, big step for Connecticut court to allow that to happen, and we are all pleased about that. And I think, we just have to watch your case and see how it unfolds. But I'm hopeful for a positive outcome here, Jerry. What's your next? You don't know what your next date is, or do you have something set up right now?
Yeah. We did get 6 more days in court. We have 2 in December, December 3rd and 4th, and then 4 more days in the first week in January. And I was asked to submit, what I want in this situation. And so where I am right now is the first thing I want is sole physical legal custody. That was number one. Number two is immediate transfer of custody.
Right.
And during which time my ex-wife is to go to a family therapist who specializes in parental alienation. And at that point, her only contact with the kids would be telephone conversations that are recorded. And at which time, whether it be 60 or 90 days, with the stamp of approval with the therapist that she's doing better and she's worked through some of her problems. Eventually, her parenting plan, the current one we have, can resume, because I want to make it clear, I'm not trying to keep their mother long-term out of their lives. What I'm trying to do is get her the help that she needs, and hopefully that could happen. And because I do believe the same thing that the psychologist said, these children need both parents in their lives, and that's very, very important. So at that point, if she was to, resume, then I've asked that she put a $10,000 bond up, and also there'd be financial sanctions. So any time that she did not get those kids to the reunification therapy, or there was any anything else that she didn't comply with the parenting plan, the first offense would be $500. It would double each time. And if in the event she was found in contempt of those orders, then she would lose custody. So I strongly believe that there needs to be some safeguards with all these things. And if there's financial safeguards and the risk of losing custody, I think those are the two most important things that hopefully could deter future alienation to continue.
You're absolutely right. And that is, I told Jennifer, your partner, that Brian Ludmer, the attorney in Canada that I've alluded to on a million different occasions, he has a terrific line of questioning just for this. So if you want the recipe for this to happen and be successful, you need to get your attorney, Pattis, in touch with Brian Ludmer. I cannot stress that enough, Jerry. It is crucial that this court understands that this woman is not giving guidance, boundaries, consequences, or incentives to either see you or not see you. I mean, the other way around. She's giving them those issues to not see you. And so once you get her on the stand and she is given a certain set of questions, she basically shows the court that she is not being a responsible parent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how it works. There's a call I want to grab. Someone has a question for you.
Okay.
Is this Robert?
Hi. How you doing, Jill?
I'm okay. How are you? Do you have a question for Jerry?
Yes. Jerry?
Yes. Hi, Robert.
First of all, congratulations on the testimony that you're able to get from Drs. Gottlieb and Dr. Baker promote your case, which is very important. And as you know, it affects a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, in that regard, can you make available, perhaps through Jill, the transcripts of Dr. Gottlieb's and Dr. Baker's testimony?
Dr. Gottlieb did not testify yet.
Dr.
Baker did, yes. And yes, I haven't gotten those transcripts yet, but when I do,
please
I
make them available. Yeah, because it would be very helpful for a lot of people to see what Dr. Baker said in order to have it pass the Daubert criteria. And another thing, you mentioned about wanting to foresee changes in the statutes regarding parental alienation. What do you have in mind? What areas would be of that you would want to address, considering how vast the statutes are in divorce and family matters?
Again, I think more and more judges need to understand that this is abuse and you need to do something about it. And I think they need, as we know, judges have, all kinds of discretion. And at times I feel it's way too much. And I think if there's some laws that have to do with financial sanctions for parents that are alienating their children, then I think if whether it's financial sanctions or other things like that, where a judge has some guidelines, so to speak, that once mm-hmm. you determine that there is parental alienation, that he does have something that he could refer to rather than this big, broad range that he has, which, again, sometimes as we know, they don't do anything because they don't get it themselves. So that's what we're trying to do in Connecticut. And again, I got the support of State Senator Fasano, and we're looking forward to make that change real soon.
In
Robert,
Illinois, yes,
Robert,
ma'am?
I only got a few seconds left, so I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Thanks,
I'll hook you up with Judy on the backside, okay? So I'll give you his information.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Robert. Jerry, Robert is an incredibly a great activist in Illinois and is just full of information. He could probably recite to you case law in almost every state of all 50. I mean, he's really amazing. He's mine and Judge Michelle's go-to guy. We call him the Henny Youngman of parental alienation. So he's such a terrific guy. But we got to wrap. I told you it would go very fast, and it did. And I'm just, again, hopeful for a positive outcome for you and your triplets and for their mother. You know, everybody can have a meaningful relationship with your kids. And when she understands that she's not destroying you, where you're sad, no question, we're all sad when we're alienated parents and grandparents. Our hearts are broken. But these people are destroying their own children. And then once they realize that, maybe they'll come to their senses and try to step up to the plate and be responsible parents for these children that are experiencing the parental alienation dynamic. So good luck.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you, Jill, for a few people I want to thank. I want to thank my significant other, Jennifer, who's been the driving force behind this whole situation. And I just want to thank all of Jill and everybody who has extended themselves, you know, to me and have given us their time and advice. I really appreciate it. And Dr. Baker and Linda and, you know, the whole group. And, you know, I feel like this alienation, it's we have a fraternity and we have to just keep pressing along and changing the laws.
You are so right, and we will all be looking for your updates and information on your case, and again, praying and hoping that it's a positive outcome. So keep us posted, and thank you for giving me an hour out of your afternoon.
Jill, and I hope to see you in Lakeland, Florida, Jennifer and I.
Oh, we will see you there, absolutely. Please be there. It's going to be
a great
conference. Thanks, Jerry.
Okay, thank you, Jill. Okay,
bye-bye
now.